Commissioner, you are ready to roll.
All right. All right. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Culk. We're meeting for a informal today on case number PU 14-109. It's approximately 1:30 on December 17th. I don't really have any opening comments. Just thank the company for coming by today and see if Commissioner Crispin has any. We'll turn it over to the portfolio holder.
I have no opening comments.
All right, Commissioner Fedorchuk, it's all yours. It's a precursor to January 1st when it becomes all yours.
Then it becomes all yours.
Yeah, we flip around. You become the chair, and yep. I get this back.
So you guys get to deal with Brian again. Then you'll really be wanting to give me gifts. That's right. We'll all be carrying them then. I don't have any opening comments. I think we can just kind of cut to the chase and turn it over to the company to hear your thoughts. And this is a good chance to hear what you are thinking of, get to the bottom of the numbers a bit. And we established this rider last summer, the hopes of not needing it. For me, I was hoping to not need it for longer than this, but at least customers got a breakthrough the first, or last quarter of the year at least. And so I'm interested in listening to what you have to say about this and having a chance to ask some questions.
Thank you. I think you know everyone here, but maybe I should just have everyone go around the room and introduce themselves. I'm Dan Kuntz with MDU Resources Group.
Oh, does yours not work?
No, it's not. There we go. Jay Scable, Vice President of Electric Supply.
Tammy Eberly with Montana Dakota.
Garrett Sanger with Montana Dakota.
And Travis Jacobson also with Montana Dakota.
And then, of course, we have Sarah and Cardwell and Mark Hansen with us today as well.
So. And staff members, President Mike Diller and Vic Shook.
We still don't know how to say your name.
By the time I retire, I'm sure I'll have it.
Commissioners, if it's all right, I'd like to go first today. We've talked about it with the company a little bit, and I think it'll work better in this case. So a little groundwork for staff's position, and the company can follow up. So if you want to look at the non-glossy one first, I think I'll skip over the quick history of the case. You can refer to that if you'd like later. I know MDU is going to cover that a little bit in their slides, so I'm gonna shoot straight to slide number three then. On slide number three, what you have there is a depiction of earned a return on equity, the earnings that the company has earned on its stockholder and equity. And if you look across there, it is rather high. 08 was close to 14%, and 09 was down in the 11% range. 10, 11, both up there, close again to the 14% range. And if you remember, back in 2010, well, I guess Brian would be the one to remember, but back in 2010, the company filed a rate increase application, and interim rates of $7.6 million went into effect in the middle of 2010, and the eventual order was to agree to the $7.6 million interim rate adjustment going forward. So then earnings dipped a little bit in 2012. A good bit of that was due to the $3.7 million refund to customers. We had a sharing agreement in place during 2012, and then it was back up in 13 again, and now it brings us to 2014 and 2015, which is what this proceeding is about. The first,
can I interrupt really quick? Sure. What's their allowed ROE on these years? Do you have that?
We used 10.75 in the rate case. We used 10.75 in Big Stone Rider. We used
so that the rate case from 2010.
Right. We used 10.75 in the settlement agreement earlier in the year in this particular proceeding. Okay, so now in 2014, those 2014 FP means 2014 February projection. Company indicated they thought their earnings would be less than 8, and then in May, a little more than 8, and then in November, middle of November, when they refiled, their projections now are that we think we're going to earn more than 10% in 2014. In 2015, their projections are less than 8 without a generation rider in place, and then I just put my estimate in there as well, which will become clear as we go along here. So, any questions on that page before we move on?
We didn't project this downfall. So, how accurate is this projection going forward here?
Right. One thing I thought when I first started looking at the application was, well, if that's what happened in 14, maybe we just wait till the end of 15 and we'll be okay
through
at the
up.
End of 15.
That's right.
That is something that we've talked about and I've thought about. All right, next page. This is to show the significance of ROE. This is basically cumulative excess earnings by the millions, and if you pick 10% as a reasonable ROE, then since 2008, the company's made $30 million more than they should have. If you think in terms of 10.75% ROE, then the company has made $20 million more than they should have since 2008. It's also interesting to note just a 0.75% difference in ROE over time amounts to real money. And so it is a key factor, something that should be considered anyway.
You saying it's too high, Mike, or what? You say we've been too generous in the past?
Well, if you remember my testimony back in May, I said it's a difficult time in North Dakota to predict anything with the boom that's going on. But if a company continues to overearn year in and year out, year after year, then we need to be cautious of granting any additional increases. And so this is just to point out that if we had a crystal ball and could have set the ROE at 10% and they earned 10%, then they would have earned $30 million less than they did.
Could you tighten up that collar, if you will, and what comes back at what point in time?
Well, we've been doing lots of sharing agreements, and that's been in response to this. If you're asking, do we need to be more aggressive? I don't know. It's
Can you go back a slide, Mike, to the
sure.
So it screwed me up a bit because 2014 takes up. Yeah. More spots versus the other year. So walk through the 2014 FP, MP, NP, P, and sure. Then 2015 P and staff. So
this just represents what MDU has filed with us. In February, the FP is February projections. They filed in February. Their projections were that in 2014 we expect to earn less than 8% on stockholder investment or stockholder equity. Then in May, they updated their filing, and it's a little more than 8%. But November, you've got more time to look at how actuals are coming in. And, we did have a remarkable winter at the beginning of 2014. And so you know, as all of those numbers came tumbling in, it changed the earnings projections. And so in November, when they filed their updated or their refiled application for implementing a generation rider, they're around 10% or better. 10.24, I think, is the number that was filed. And in 2015, that is just putting on in graphical form what they're projecting to earn in 2015 without a generation rider in place. And the other is Mike Diller's projection.
And what do you base that on? For the same time period? The whole year, right?
I'm sorry, what was that?
You're basing your... theirs is for the year and yours is for the whole year, 2015?
Yes, 2015.
And what is how do you account for that difference?
Yep, that'll become clear.
Oh, okay. Yep. All right.
Mike, yep. On this sheet, do we have what MDU's projections were years ago on some of these previous years? Because it's probably not very fair to summarize something based on just this limited amount of time. But if as I look at it, here's what I see is, projections coming from MDU that are super conservative, and then it turns out that it's quite a bit more as you go. By November, it's already roughly 2% higher than what they were projecting earlier, so maybe that'll even go up some more. And if it's been up in the 11 to 14% range all these years, why would we be projecting 8% next year?
That's exactly right. I mean, I could have made a graph back to 1999 when I started accumulating information, and the story wouldn't be much different. But as far as being able to compare what they budgeted to actuals, you know, you could go back to the 2010 rate case, and you could. Pencil put together what they said that was going to happen and what actually did happen, but I've not done that.
And Mike, on the earnings go to the stockholders, or what happens to the earnings?
The excess earnings above whatever was authorized by the commission, yes, it goes to the bottom line, retained earnings.
Does that have any value to customers?
No.
To the does a strong stock price or anything like that have any value to the customers at all?
I don't want a company to go broke, of course, but a strong, healthy company is better than a weak one. Yeah. But, I mean, when you authorize a return on equity, what you're doing is you're looking at the market in general and how MDU fits into that market and what a reasonable return on stockholder equity should be.
And when we look at that reasonable return and allow something, the idea is, from our perspective, it shouldn't be higher than that?
Oh, I don't.
Because then you're charging customers too much?
I don't,
simplifying it?
Well, no. You don't... that's one thing you've heard me argue before on the stand, I believe, is you don't want to take an incentive away from the company. I'm not an advocate of just of capturing any differences between authorized, whether it's below or above. There should be, we call it regulatory lag, there should be some regulatory lag in the process so that if a company's a little short, they don't necessarily just run in and get a rider or a rate increase. They should have, you know, they should have a desire to manage their costs within that. No, I don't think when you authorize a return, you're necessarily saying anything above or below that is totally unreasonable.
Mm-hmm.
You look at it long term, and the earnings are, you're saying authorized should be around 10 or 11, and earnings keep coming in at 14, then I'd say that's way outside the bounds of reasonableness.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, though, yeah, you want a good, strong company, though, so they can build new stuff and get low financing rates, which will help the customers, so it's that fine line back and forth. That's where I've always struggled, is finding that spot.
Right. And that's a good thing you struggle. Okay. Are you guys on the rate base schedule then?
Tell us where you want us to be, Mike.
Okay. Let's move now to average North Dakota electric rate base. There's basically three parts to determining what the cost of service of the company is. It's rate base or capital, cost of equipment, cost of money, and then operating expenses. You add those three up, and you hope that revenues match those three things. So let's look at the first one, rate base. You can see that back in 2008, the company had less than $200 million worth of rate base or investment in North Dakota. And, if you look across there, we're at, in 15, we're getting close to $500 million in rate base. And so things are changing. I put together three boxes there. I tried to line them up with the years that they're applicable to, just to give you some idea of what's causing the large increases. Diamond Willow 1 came in 2008. Diamond Willow 2 and Cedar Hills in 2010. But they affect all four of those years as far as rate base levels, because we use an average rate base. Then beginning in 11, the transmission and distribution facility investments really started ramping up compared to the old days, I'll say. Back in 2005, total company transmission and distribution increases in investment were $5 to $8 million a year. And now we're at, $50 million a year or better. And so things have really changed there. The other is Big Stone, AQCS, and Heskett 3.
So, Mike, do you think that and I know the companies will clean up a lot of these questions if they don't agree with what you say, they'll tell us when their turn comes.
They will.
But do you think some of this is, I remember living the Diamond Willow 1 and 2 and the Cedar Hills Wind Farm. That was a pretty ugly rate case. It was. And it came to be a kind of a black box settlement somewhere in there. And you suppose that some of those things down there, the number we resulted in wasn't quite adequate, and then that just kind of perpetuated as time went on. And the same thing for the transmission, that you just don't quite get a good picture. And then all of a sudden you get this big number that you didn't deal with earlier.
No, this is different from the earnings line that I drew. This depicts what they've actually got in the ground.
Okay.
In each year.
But did we not give them enough for that investment, though? When you have these settlements that kind of turn out to be one number, and they go back and break it all apart, did not enough of that get allocated maybe to this line of costs?
I just say that if you go back and you look at the earnings levels, they earned well in those periods.
Enough.
They got enough.
Whatever, gotcha. So if you'd overlay the earnings to the cost increases, that's where it's, I got.
So am I understanding this correctly to be, this is just new investments in resources, infrastructure, but
this is not
that the company
this
owns.
Is not new investments. This is
total investments.
All investments. Yeah. For North Dakota electric operations. And all I'm trying to do here by putting these three boxes in here is give you an idea of what the major drivers of the increases are. So,
but there's $200 million where you haven't put any boxes.
Well, those boxes, I wasn't clear there. I tried to line them up for the years that it affects. In other words, Diamond Willow 1 and 2 and Cedar Hill.
Oh, I see.
That affects 08 through 11. The change, the ramped up expenditures in transmission and distribution facilities, 2011 to the end of time. And Big Stone, AQCS, it started in 13, and will end in 15. And then Heskett 3, of course, came online this last summer. So.
Got it.
So that's the first of three. Mm-hmm. The next the next slide goes to cost of capital. So you take investment times the cost of capital, and that gives you a return required to satisfy debt holders and stockholders. And so what this depicts is the weighted cost of capital, and it's not the greatest chart. I actually wish I'd either added one or not included this one at all, because weighted cost of capital is maybe a little confusing. But what this shows is it shows the overall cost of capital for long-term debt, short-term debt, preferred stock, and common equity. And so you can see that the overall cost of capital has essentially has come down since 2011. And if you drew a line like I did on my sheet on the top and then drew a line along the blue lines, you'd kind of see that most of the change is due to the lower cost of long-term debt, or I should say the lower weighted cost of long-term debt. Not all of it. One of the reasons that 13 and 15 costs are down is they've got a lot of short-term debt. Presumably that's to for construction of Heskett and AQCS, but they can clarify that further. And so I would just say this. The only difference between 2015 projected and 2015 staff is that I've assumed a 10% ROE, and their bar graph there has 12.75% in there.
12 or 10? 10.75?
Theirs is 10.75, and I've included 10% for cost of common equity. To give you an idea of what the actual cost, rather than a weighted cost, it might help to the cost of long-term debt to MDU for 13 is 6%. Staff used to complain bitterly from time to time about why don't you guys refinance and get your costs down? Other companies have lower cost of long-term debt than you do, and they've been doing that. You can't just run in. Garrett's their chief financial person. He can talk to this more than I can, but there's a penalty of closing out long-term debt early, and so you have to look at that before you just go in and refinance. But the short-term debt for 2013 was less than 1%, and they had a whole bunch of it in 2013, and so that helped reduce overall weighted cost of capital. Preferred stock is 4.6% cost. So that's two of the three components. The last one, the next slide, is operating expenses or total expenses. And it just gives you an idea of where electric expenses have gone since 2008. Again, kind of like that last graph, if you look at the very bottom, the production expense, that's the big driver of the change that you see overall. And of course, production expense is just a function of sales to a large degree. And so
why the huge difference in 2015 between the projected and the staff on administration in general?
Oh, yeah, sorry. I didn't have a breakdown of 2015 projected costs, and so that A and G big block there for MDU's 2015 projection actually includes my purple, my green, and my red. It includes A and G customer expense, distribution, and transmission expense.
Mike, when was it when MDU flipped on? For many, many years, they had excess energy. They were selling back into the market, making a bunch of money for everybody. Did that flip in 2008? I think that sticks in my mind, is that it was like what caused all this bedlam.
That sounds about the right thing, but I don't recall.
Right.
When on the ABS 2 contract expired, then we lost the ability for all those sales for resale.
And we're still trying to find November
of 08.
Yep. Okay.
We had a 20-year or 25-year purchase agreement with Basin at the time to take energy from 66 megawatts from ABS, and that expired in 08.
So then if you go to the next page, I've put some numbers to all the pictures that I've shown you. Starting with the MDU's 2015 projection, rate base times their cost of capital gives you return required, and then they, their projection is we're going to earn $31 million, so a difference is $8 million return deficiency. You got to increase that to pay Uncle Sam, so their 2015 projection is a $13 million deficiency in 2015. then I made three adjustments to it, and I think I'll talk about them right now. The first one, what I did on the very first one is I looked at the 2014 projections. They started in February, and then by the end of November, they, of course, updated their filing, and I noticed that one project in particular was delayed into 2015, but I just took the updated 2014 projections and got a percentage of what they originally anticipated at the beginning of the year and applied that percentage to their 2015 projections. There's going to be projects that might get pushed off into 2016 or projects you don't get to, or maybe there could be additional projects, of course. You could decide not to do one. Anyway, so it's not rocket science what I did. It's just I'm trying to take what I would consider, trying to present a conservative estimate or approach. And so I took out $9 million from rate base. The rate of return, the only difference there is, again, they use 10.75% ROE. I said, what will the results be if I use 10%? We used a 10% return on. We've talked a little bit about where that 10.75 comes here, but not too long ago you authorized a 10% return on MDU's gas operations. NSP, if you remember that rather large case, we started at 9.75% and end with 10.25% for 2013 through 2016. So, 10% I thought was a reasonable place to be. The last adjustment you see there, return earned, I really couldn't tell for sure why MDU was projecting such a large increase in other O&M expenses. And so what I did was I took 2014 other O&M expenses and increased them by 4%. And so when I did that, it resulted in a $4 million reduction in what MDU is projecting for O&M expenses in 2015. And then if you tax effect that, the difference is $2.5 million. But so then it's just a matter of multiplying and adding down. And when I make these kinds of adjustments, I feel fairly comfortable that that MDU is somewhere around the $5 million revenue deficiency mark. I didn't do it just to come up with. They're asking for 5.27. I know it looks suspicious, but. But I will say this. If you turn the next page, this is my this is the one that I'm still concerned about, and I don't think it would be fair just to stop there. I want you to know that I'm concerned with this part of the projections. I've not made any adjustments to gross margins, but we should at least look at it because it's a significant part of the picture. And so what I've done is and gross margins, for your information, is simply revenues less production expense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So if you think about it in terms of after we produce the electricity and maintain the facilities, the revenues left over from that is what we can pay the rest of the expenses with. So if you look across there, you can see that in 2013 and 2014, which we're almost finished with, and hopefully 2014 is pretty close to what actuals will end up being, I just drew a straight line through there and said, well, if that's the new course, then how does 2015 projection shake out? I'll say this, that a good bit of that dip that you see in 2015, which is MDU's projections, is due to Big Stone outage expenses that they expect in 2015. AQCS's project is supposed to be done August or October of 2015, and so when they're cutting over, it's a great time to look at the rest of the facility, and while you've got it torn apart, make some upgrades, improvements, clean it up. And so that will be a one-time cost, but it indeed will be in 2015. And so here's why you say, well, Mike, then everything looks fine and dandy. Here's the deal. You see what a few million, I mean, we're talking about over $100 million worth of gross margins in 14 and 15, and there's lots of things that can affect margins. I jotted down a few, and the company can add to them when it's their turn, but riders and rate cases, of course, add to margins, increase revenues, but doesn't do anything to production expense. The non-controllables are the ones both the company and I struggle with, and that's, what are sales going to be in the future? What's the weather going to be like? Price of oil long-term. I mean, that could be, that one we weren't really thinking about until the last month, but that could change, that could be a game changer. Plant outages, since we mentioned that one, I guess that could be a controllable or a non-controllable, depending on the circumstances, but I guess you could say in this one, it's controllable. They could just decide not to make the improvements while they had it tore apart, but we might have problems with that ourselves in making a decision like that. So that takes me through my slides. The last one is a staff recommendation. Basically, the company and staff We've talked about extending the sharing agreement through 2015 because, quite frankly, they may be as much nervous about not making earnings as I am at them making too much once again. And so that's something that we've agreed to, if the commission's amenable to that. And the other thing is I just, in future filings, if they could functionalize other O&M costs so that, when we look at annual reports and we have them all functionalized, we can kind of look at our trends and see if it makes sense what they're projecting. So that concludes my presentation.
Okay, so when we went through this before and we set it all up and put this in place, there was no cost till some point in the future. At that point in time, I thought, why would we just do a rate case? But then we didn't because, hey, if we're not going to charge customers anything, I was okay with it. Why don't we just do a rate case, Mike? Why don't we just get all the cards on the table now? This is not a transmission rider. This is a generation rider. Let's get a rate case and talk about the things that we talked about before, with making sure their employees got the right compensation, making sure their retirement stuff isn't too much or too little, making sure, why don't we do that now?
As you know, you guys are the policy. You guys will make that.
I'm asking you, I mean, do I get a better deal in a rate case? Is this the best deal I can get? Is this?
I don't know that I could answer that, Brian. If
I have no leverage here. The reason that Xcel and those people, got, in my mind, got the 10.25 is because they gave somewhere else. Either accept or reject this. Or tweak it, I guess, based on, but your recommendation is pretty much accepted.
My recommendation, I think that the generation rider should bring MDU down to a reasonable earnings level in 2015, or up, however you want to look at it, up or down. The sharing, so here's I guess what I would say to that, Brian. There's two ways. So we've got some protection in 2015, if you agree to that. In addition to that, if you recall, we're looking at this every year.
Okay.
And it's to be filed in and coordinated with their reported earnings. So if they come back, they tell us they're not going to earn 10%, and they come back and they earn 14%, then you turn off the generation rider next year. And so I don't know. I don't know that you would get that in a rate case. I think you're probably in a better position with this generation rider, given the fact that you can turn it off, turn it on, and that we have a sharing agreement for both 14 and 15 of the commission.
And it was a good idea, I thought, when the company came forward, because it would have been in a rate case if they wouldn't have offered up, you know, no cost in the very beginning. So I don't discount that. I just, is this the future? This the company will answer this, but I don't want the future of new generation to be rider for this and rider for that and rider for this. We need to put these big projects in base rates, I think, as soon as you can.
There is nothing stopping MDU from filing a rate increase and rolling all of this into, if $5 million doesn't get them to a reasonable earnings level, then I would expect them to file, and you would expect them to roll that into their base rates. But okay. I think for now, I think this makes sense to me.
I have another question for you, Mike. For looking at the chart where you've got the rate base chart that shows there are significant increases in rate base, and you overlay that with the gross margins, and maybe this isn't a fair comparison, but on the rate base, that suggests they have a lot more investments, so they need more revenues to cover it.
Well, right. Yeah.
And then here that shows that they're still ending up with increasing amounts of money despite that.
Well, you have an AQCS rider that's increasing revenues, so it increases margins. You have a trend. Do you guys have transmission riders?
Yes.
We just voted on one today.
Yeah.
Decreasing their costs, 60 cents per customer.
Yeah. You've got, now we'll have Heskett.
But if this is going up, does this suggest that they need more money?
No, it's just a way of me trying to, it's a very big part of their rate case. It's just a way for me to, it looks to me like 13 and 14, it's a new game, right? It's angling up quite steeply. And so I just drew a line through it to say, okay, well, what are they projecting for 2015? And if it's below that line, why is it below that line? And a big part of that answer was Big Stone outage scheduled in August or October, whenever it is, later this year, later in 2015. That answered most of my questions. So.
But this suggests to me that they don't need more money if their gross margins are increasing.
Well,
but am I seeing that wrong?
Well, gross margins, all of this culminates in numbers eventually, and so those higher margin levels are captured in my revenue deficiency calculation. So rate base times rate of return gives you return required. Where the increased margins are captured is in that return earned line. And so, yes, I've included the higher margins in 2015.
Okay. Well, I'm sure the company can explain why you need that money. So maybe. Yeah.
And I'll say this, wrapping up, that I did make it clear to MDU that, you know, it's their job to sell it. I went first because I wanted to share some concerns and lay the groundwork a little bit. And it's definitely their job to explain and tell you why they need it. So,
okay.
Cool. You've never been bashful with telling us if you don't agree with what MDU's position's been. So I take your silence to this is a positive that you support most of what they're saying.
I'll tell you, it was a hard one. It was a hard one because we've got this company has a rich history of earning more than I think is reasonable. And so, I think some of it is, I've talked to Tammy and Travis about this, and we're going to work to try and shore that up a little bit. But I think some of it is just a systemic problem of sorts, in that you budget the way you budget. It's not all that different than the way we budget here at the commission. Your chiefs say we need all this pie in the sky, and then we bring it to you and we add it all up, bring it to you, and you guys look at it and you go, we're not giving you that, we're not doing this, and you sum that up, and then you send it down to the legislature, and they do their legislative stuff and give us less yet. That's really kind of what goes on here. MDU, their chiefs out in the field, the way they budget on a regional basis, their chiefs say we need Boston Joe manager says I need 20 more people, and all of this stuff filters up, and then they have review committees and management teams that make some adjustments, and it comes to us. And so what I've tried to do is make legislative-type adjustments to give me some comfort and where the company's earnings, in my mind, might really be. And so does that help?
Well, you know, it does. I'm just trying to, you know, we've had, Xcel has been in here about every year for the last 5-6 years. And they're going through a lot of build-out right now, and we've wrestled with some rate cases, but we kind of really know where they're at. They know where we're at. We're giving them the money they need to make a buck, and it's settled down pretty good. So I'm just concerned that, you know, the last rate case we had with MDU was very interesting, and the MDU appears like they're growing just as much as anybody else. And so I don't want to get caught up where all of a sudden we're way behind the power curve with them. So that's where I think some of this will just keep kicking the can down the road. And every time they over-earn, we never have a way of recouping that. They've over-earned for the last 2-3 years. But then they're coming with a shortfall, and you can't take the over-earnings in those years and put them here. It's just the way the law is.
Yep. No, it's a very difficult situation, and I think you're even maybe reflecting back on my testimony in May. And the fact of the matter is you plow this stuff into the ground, and it takes a while for the revenues to catch up.
Right.
You know, and so how do you
– So would you recommend if their vote was to reject this, then what happens? Then is that automatically – then the company probably forces them into a rate case?
Haven't thought about that, but I suppose they would.
I mean, the choices are either accept, reject, or modify, I suppose.
I know it sounds like a question to work with them on.
All right. Well, but no, I mean, you'd be the conduit in some of that discussion. Your recommendations. Right. All right, well, we'll probably switch gears, I guess. But thank you, Mike.
Question for Mike is kind of the problem here that years ago, small things were small, and large things like building a new power plant or something were huge. And so there was a clear line between where you just adjust and where you do the rate case. And now we're unable to build the large scale things. We're trying to ramp up. And so these wind farms and Heskett 3 here, they're pretty big, but they're not like a couple $1 billion power plant or something. So it's just, we're sort of caught somewhere in between with these projects.
Yeah.
If we can just adjust and go,
Or having a rate case is kind of falling between. Am I right, right about that?
Right. I mean, they may not be $1 billion, but they're rather large investments from the standpoint of.
But if we're going to have a rate case for everyone every time they spend.
Oh, yeah.
$75 million to
right.
$500 million.
Exactly right.
We'll pretty much have three rate cases going on at all times.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Thank you.
Just a light cue up, right?
I'd like to kind of just a little bit of background on how we got here. We're going to refresh your memory there, hit on a couple of things that Mr. Diller talked about, and then have our witnesses here kind of step through a couple of slides that we've prepared in support of the application. And first of all, it was in August of last year when you approved the generation resource, the settlement agreement that provided for the implementation of a generation resource recovery rider tariff outside of general rate proceedings. And I think Commissioner Crispin really kind of touched on it, the value of riders. We're in kind of an unprecedented time in terms of the amount of capital we're having to invest in our system for a variety of reasons, whether it's transmission build-outs, environmental mandates, or just plain growth. If you take the chart that Mike had here, you look back to 2008, our net investment over the prior 80 or 90 years time period was less than $200 million. In the since that time, in 6 years, it's grown to about $500 million. So you've gone from $200 million to $500 million. So unless we have a way to react to making those kind of investments, you're going to be in for rate cases, all the time. So we need an ability for these riders, and we're tracking them. You're not having a situation kind of like the RAS rate case where you're setting it based upon what that one test year is, and then the rates are there, and maybe they'll be good enough next year. Maybe they'll over recover. Maybe they'll under recover. Here you've got trackers that are recovering only what the money you need for that particular investment until you do get to the next rate case.
How do you go through, Dan? And I appreciate the candidness that we've always had and the solution you came with us back when this first started. But without a rate case, how do you make sure your employees are getting paid enough? And how do you plan the retirement programs? How do you do those other things? How do you manage your money to do those things?
Well, I think we still have to manage the company. I mean, even in a rate case, I'm not sure you're going to try to set the pension rates for employees or set what our what we're paying an engineer to in Williston.
Well, you ask for a certain amount of money for those.
I mean, we've got to come in. We'll have wage scales. You can look at those. If you think they're too high, you can argue about that sort of thing. But at the end of the day, those are things that we have to manage. And maybe it's some value right now. Tammy, why don't you turn to the last slide? I think there's an implication here because that we've had high earnings or because we haven't had a rate case here that somehow customers are being gouged or we're not doing a very good job or we're in running our company. This is a comparison to our rates of every other electric company in the state. And you can see from that, we're the second lowest cost provider in the state. I think that tells you something from a rate case standpoint. Are our rates fair and reasonable? I mean, at the end of the day, that's what a general rate case is all about, is trying to set fair and reasonable rates. I think that is an indication that we're doing something right here. And whether that's because of the margins, which are, thank goodness, margins are going up, because if they weren't going up, we'd be in for rate cases all the time. The fact that margins are going up means that that's an indication to some extent of efficiencies. It's also an indication of things like Mike mentioned, weather. Maybe we had favorable weather in a particular year or the fact that our sales are growing. All those things are margin, but thank goodness our margins are going up because that allows us to absorb cost increases in wages and extra investment to serve those types of customers. And that's why we haven't had to come in for a general rate case for years, is because those margins have been increasing cushion some of those inflationary increases and extra investment that we've had to make. But I think that's, you know, that's kind of my response in terms of, you know, from a general rate case, do you need to be taking us to task with our wages or our pension or our service? You know, the other thing is, are you hearing?
Again, I don't view rate cases as that way. I disagree with you saying that they imply that you're not doing the right stuff. I think you guys do a great job. But I think the rate cases, I think it's a good chance for good candidate exchange back and forth.
Well,
I don't ever view a rate case that we're trying to nickel and dime. It's to get a true reflection of what your company's doing, so you get a true reflection of what you should be getting from us, so we understand the shape of the company. Yeah. I understand Xcel Energy a lot better now than I did 4 years ago. So I view it as that, not that we're trying to.
Unfortunately, that's the way rate cases tend to become. is that sort of thing, and hopefully we're able to communicate and understand our business with outside of a rate case.
Right.
I mean, even this sort of exchange, I think, is impart some information in terms of, you know, how we operate, how we set our budgets, how we're doing in relation to our peers out there in what's driving our costs, what investments we're making, what expenses we're making. So that's why we think there are some values in these riders outside of rate cases rather than continually having rate cases and trying to catch up, because there is regulatory lag. And not to mention, there is a great deal of resources that go into a general rate case in terms of from our standpoint, staff standpoint. Here you're looking at one investment. You know, you can narrow it down, figure out what the cost of capital is. You know that you made that investment. There's a return requirement component associated with it that you need to cover, so it's a lot more focused. We filed that generation rider back in February, and at that time we thought we were going to need a rate increase when Heskett 3 came online in what we thought was going to be in July and August. By the time we got to July and August, as a result of the cold weather we had last spring, our earnings were running ahead of what our plan, what we projected them to be. And as a result of the settlement agreement, we agreed to withdraw the request for an immediate adjustment under the rider. We put the rider in place, but we were going to leave it at zero for the time being and see how things went. And the hope was that if we got a little bit of air conditioning load and so forth, we wouldn't need the rider that year. And we also, part of that agreement, the third piece of that agreement, was the revenue sharing mechanism. That if, you know, and because of the concerns that Mike had expressed, that we'd had a couple years where we were above the ROE that had been previously approved, we agreed to a revenue sharing mechanism. And I think the thought was at that time, if we had a warm summer where we had some air conditioning load, we could be into a revenue sharing situation. Well, we never had the air conditioning load, as you know, that didn't really materialize. But what we have had here now in the last month or so, and particularly in November, was some real cold weather in November. So that's kind of picked us back up and made up for some of that lost air conditioning load we had. So we're, from what I understand, and Garrett and Tammy and Travis can talk about this a little bit more if you want, if we expect we'll be very close to that 10.075, maybe a little bit above, maybe a little bit below, but we're going to be right on that level. The fourth piece of that settlement agreement that you approved is that we could file for a rate adjustment under the tariff if we projected our earnings were expected to fall below the 10.75. And that's why we're here today, because as we look at the investments that we're going to have to make in 2015, the additional investments we'll be making, along with the O&M expenses increases that we'll have, as well as the fact that now Heskett will be in place for a full year, that we will need to implement an adjustment under that rider. And the fifth thing was in the settlement agreement that the company and staff is stipulated to what the cost of Heskett would be on an annual basis and the revenue requirement for that, and that was the $5.27 million. So that's what we're here for now, is to implement that rate adjustment based upon that return. A couple of things that I wanted to hit on in responding to Mike. One was the margin situation. Increasing margins are not a bad thing. That's a good thing. Hopefully, you know, we can keep that going, because, like I said, that eliminates or reduces the need for rate increases. The other thing is, is return on equity. Sometimes people refer to return on equity as an authorized return or allowed return. Return on equity is the commission's estimate of the company's cost of equity. What you estimate it takes for an investor to invest in this particular company. And it's not a magic number. Unlike the cost of debt, you can't go to the Wall Street Journal and figure out what the LIBOR rate is for yesterday. You can't find that for a cost of equity. It's you bring in experts, and experts try to predict, or not predict, but try to determine what the cost of equity is for a particular company. And virtually everyone I've seen is always, you know, it's not an exact number. It's they say it's in within a range. You know, it's 10 to 10 and a half, or 9 and 3 quarters to 10 and 3 quarters, or something like this. It's not an exact number. You're trying to determine the company's cost of capital at that particular point in time of what investors are going to look for in return to invest in that company versus their opportunity to invest in thousands of other companies around the world having different and the same type of risk characteristics. So it's not really a cap. It's not really a floor, but what you don't want from the commission and from a company standpoint is for a company to continually earn below what its cost of capital is. Because if it's earning below its cost of capital, investors aren't going to be willing to put their money into that company for us to go out and have the money that we need to then build the Heskett 3 or whatever, our new transmission lines or new distribution lines and that sort of thing. So, you know, the fact that you're up or down below what that number is, you know, I don't consider that really a bad thing. The bad thing is if you're consistently below it, then you've got a company that's in trouble and you're probably going to need a rate case. If you're above it consistently, well, maybe there is a time for adjustment, and I think that's why we agreed to the revenue sharing arrangement here. But the fact that, you know, you set it at 10 and 3 quarters and it comes in at 11 or 10 and a half, I don't think is a bad thing, or that the company should be chastised because it went over that. If anything, I think that's you'd much rather have that than having them under-earn and having to come in for a rate case, particularly if you can do it and still have rates that are competitive. I would argue if a company is able to keep its rates low, it ought to be able to get some premium on that return on equity. Its investors should be rewarded for the fact that the company has done a good job in managing its expenses, managing its investment, so that it can deliver rates that are competitive towards customers. So I guess that's enough from my standpoint. I want to turn it now over to our witnesses, and I think the first one is Tammy.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Commissioner. Throw one picture in there about the numbers and graphs. What we're here about today was Heskett 3. It did go online on August 7th of 2014. So just a photo of that station. I would still like to, I think Commissioner Chrisman made it out, but we can still do some tours. And Mike made it out. Mike and Victor made it out, I believe.
Also anyway. The South Dakota Commission came up too. Was that
and the South Dakota Commission was up.
Sarah.
Yeah. That's right. All right. But just, again, what we're, you know, kind of honing in on what we're asking for here today, and we've talked about it, but we're asking to implement that Generation Resource Recovery Rider. I put down an effective date of January 8th. I think we had January 1 in the application, just trying to work through your schedule, and assuming this is approved into what's most efficient in terms of implementing this charges. Just showing here what that $5.27 million revenue requirement allocated among the various rate schedules as pursuant to the settlement agreement, resulting in a charge, then if we look just at the residential, of 0.283 cents per kilowatt hour, which is about $2.53 a month. And if we look the graph we showed before, you know, our rate comparison graph, just took a look at adding in our generation rider, we still remain in the second place with about a 9 cent average rate. So
let me ask you this question.
It's not pushing us.
How would both of us, MDU and the commission, respond to the average customer says, you're going to increase my power bill $2.50 a month, and I haven't had any chance to say anything about it?
It has been notice for hearing. There's been opportunities for customers.
You'd go back to that and say it was out there. It's not like a rate case where we go out and make a conscious effort, and once again, nobody comes sometimes. But you feel comfortable with that your customers, when they get tasked with a $2.50 a month increase, are going to be okay with that?
You know, I do. We insert in our bills. We inserted when we filed in May. We inserted again, you know, advising of the change. As you've noted, we did, you know, I think back to those were gas cases, but last winter on that was horrific days of, I mean, it was cold, but, I mean, we just typically don't get a lot of customers.
Agreed.
Coming to those input sessions. So, we're trying to put more and more information out on our website, in addition to inserts, so that they have information available, what's coming up, in terms of future costs. So
it could be more too. You know what I mean? So this is a protection the other way. But I mean, your large users, they're not tracking this or talking to you guys all the way through. You've got a lot of companies, big companies out there that.
You know, Commissioner, I think our customers recognize the fact that we can't build new power plants, right, a new transmission, a new distribution, that we just can't do this, you know.
For free.
For free.
Agreed.
That I don't think that, you know, they would be terribly surprised that there was a rate increase associated with building a power plant like that. Just like, you know, my cable bill and every other bill that you get has got price adjustments along the way. They recognize what's happened with wages. In North Dakota, particularly in the area where we operate, all those things. So I don't think they're terribly surprised by the fact that we're
But have you had those discussions with your big users about this? And they offer different rates. I understand that, too.
Yeah, and you know, we've got folks out in the field visiting with customers. Okay. And we, you know, it's something that we think about, and how do we get people to engage and what's coming up. So, you know, even in terms of EPA and effects, and we're continuing to work on that in terms of getting information out there so that customers aren't hopefully caught off guard by it. Will they all embrace it? Not sure. But some of those things, it's just so that they're aware what's coming, you know, down the road. But, yeah, we have folks out in the field visiting with those larger customers and providing responses to customers on an as-needed basis. So, again, we're looking at the plan for 2015, which we've talked about, which Mike had included in his graphs. And that's really what we used as a first cut at. We need to get in and get the rider in place based on what our plan was showing. So we were showing an estimated return on equity of 7.39% without the generation rider and a return of 8.72% with the rider. Throughout the process, we looked at some sensitivities. We worked with Mike, provided some additional information, and Travis Jacobson is going to walk through kind of what the exhibits that we included in the filing that support both our original 2015 projection, which is a little bit difficult to see up there, but you should have in your packet as well, and then the sensitivities that we ran to shore that up.
Before you get into those, Tammy, the $2.53 per month average residential,
mm-hmm.
is 894, I mean, it says based on customer using 894 kilowatt hours, but is that, in fact, your average residential usage? It seems like to me it would be more than that, or else I just use too much.
We need to come out and visit about conservation.
It
is a broad average. It is our, because I think we for years used 750 kilowatt hours. That was just industry standard or whatever, and I think you challenged us on that. So this is our class average, so it's the entire residential class on average. So there will be some above that and some below that.
I thought it would be up even more.
Yeah. So, but that is a fairly recent look at the class average at 894. All right. Anything? Okay. Travis? Okay. Do you want to give him the mic?
Slide up there now, as Tammy mentioned, is our first cut at the projection for 2015. And it was largely based on our plan. And what this shows is that our non-fuel revenue is up about 8%. And along Mike's line of margin, that increase in margin. The other O&M we're showing is increasing approximately 17%. And to expand on that just a little bit more, we are seeing significant needs in our service area in regards to some labor and outage costs that Mike mentioned. So that's reflective of that and what people have budgeted so far this year.
Where do you conclude the costs? Like Garrett and I have talked before about all the work you're doing up in Watford City trying to figure out who's going to pay what for what portion of their line. Where is it what you pay for these new services tie into this mix? If you understand the question I'm getting at, Garrett.
Like a customer contribution?
Yeah, but versus what you pay. Or how
what
does
we
that
pay is only what we pay goes into the rate base. Okay. Customer, what the customer pays doesn't go into rate.
Understood, but what's that number? We were talking about that before. Is that still 50-50, or is everyone in negotiation, or is that a big, these new services, what your share, is that turning out to be a big number over here?
We look at really our extension policy, and we're looking at the estimated revenue stream, so it really would be on a case-by-case basis. So, you know, a typical residential, that our revenues would recover the cost of an extension, a service extension. Okay. But if we're talking about...
But none of that is any
then
of that
on the other
this?
Extreme, some... we no. So in rate base, as they mentioned, okay. It's all of those are offset. Either if we receive a contribution in aid of that construction, meaning it's a significant project, they don't have a revenue stream there to back that, we may get that on a non-refundable basis. So it'll reduce the plant investment immediately. So what we book to plant and what you would see on our rate-based schedule would be net of that. Okay. The others, the advances we collect from customers, which are refundable over time, those will reduce our rate base. So, okay.
So in terms of, be clear on your questions, any of that driving this, the portion, the investment that we're making is showing up in here, and mm-hmm. okay. You know, because we're putting in new service lines and so forth, but at the same time, we're adding new customers. We're getting new, that's why, you know, revenues are going up. So, you know, there's a, you've got more investment, but you've got more revenues.
But is that might change in the next couple of years? That won't change this too much.
No, you wouldn't. You okay. wouldn't. That was wouldn't think so.
Is your question the like, what the percentage?
No, just a general feel for it, because I know that Watford area, you're very concerned about it, as you should be. We've talked about it. Just as things change out there, how much is that going to affect this? And it sounds like not too much.
Yeah, that number is a little less than $4 million out of the whole 120 that we're budgeting for next year. So okay. That's not a real big piece. I mean, it's...
If the customers are contributing to the project, does it show up in revenues? Or where does that show up?
No, it's actually called a rate-based deduct. So it's money we're holding.
Okay.
And so it reduces the rate base that we would ask to earn we would submit to earn a return on.
Sure.
So it would reduce
it's like
it's it in
owned
that
by
way.
Them kind of.
Yeah.
We used to get a lot of questions on that, but I haven't had any for about a year on that. People are kind of realize they got to pony up if they want the stuff. Sorry about that.
And I guess you can see that our operating income remains relatively flat from 2014 to 2015, and yet our rate base is increasing approximately 27%. And Tammy had mentioned return on equity without the generation rider. What we show based on this projection is 7.39%, and then our very bottom number, it includes the generation rider at 8.72%.
How would you explain that guy in the coffee shop about how you need more money to get your return on equity up. What, if you said, why do you need that money? How do you explain it down to the average Joe?
Travis isn't going to talk to me.
You know,
well, but that's a question we get.
Company, in order to attract investors to, you know, to pay its investors to invest in that company, you've got to earn a return that's competitive. That's what I said, the cost of capital. What's their cost of equity? And you'll see last year, you know, based upon what Travis is projecting there right now, based upon what we knew when we prepared his numbers, that 10.25. That's, you know, within a reasonable range of the 10.75. That's a number that, if, you know, you could sustain that, you're going to be able to probably go out and attract capital so that we can build more Heskets if we need to, or put more service lines in Watford City. You can attract capital if you're somewhere in that range.
Well, I'm tracking what you're saying, Dan. I'm just trying to boil this down to, when we go out and say your cost is going to increase $250 a month, and here's why. That's just something for all of us to muddle on to make sure we're understanding. I mean, I get what you're saying. I'm tracking exactly what you're saying.
You've made additional investments, and those investments have to be paid for.
Yeah, that's probably the better answer. It's to cover investments by the company to keep the company solid.
In the 80s, with power plants and transmission lines. So now you come forward 30 years later, now you have to, you know, build for the new growth and future growth. So it's like a tranches of investments, you know, right.
We're continuing to make investments in North Dakota's grid, and we need to pay for those investments. That's why they're getting this extra money.
I mean, it's kind of unfair to think about, well, it's just for the profit. Well, the profit's the last piece that gets paid.
Right.
The debt's got to get paid first. The expenses got to get paid first. The profit's the last piece. So when you're short dollars, that's the piece that shows up on the bottom. But really, the driver is the fact that you've got a lot more investment and a lot more expense out there that you've got to pay for.
So just to put a little finer point on this, I'm thinking of a conversation I had in the grocery store with somebody.
I'm with the set
who,
of station, you're at Dan.
Yeah, over the bananas.
Yeah.
And one of your customers was frustrated with rate increases. And I did remind him that they, you know, we didn't do a rate increase this fall for this Heskett plant. He was shocked. But here we are now. So I'm going to run into him again, I'm sure. So he sees this operating income, $31 million, and you need $5.2 million. Why can't you use – I mean, I know this is oversimplified, but this is just how the average, you know, folks have to understand it. Why can't you take some of the $31 million and use that for the $5.2 million that you need to pay for Heskett this year?
Well, the
$31 million
gets you a return that over time is not going to be adequate for investors. That is not going to be sufficient to attract capital. You are going to be in a not a good situation if that continued on any sort of long-term basis. Because now that's a little bit, if you take your bananas customer, if they go to the bank with a $1,000 CD and they said, okay, I'll give you $300 interest on that $1,000 CD this year, and you say, great, I'll take that. And next year you come in, and now you've got a $2,000 CD, and you said, well, I'll give you $300 for the same $300 I gave you last year on your CD. And you say, wait a minute, my CD is twice as big. I should get twice as much return. Would your customer be satisfied getting the same interest on a $2,000 CD that they got on a $1,000 CD? No, they're not going to put their money into that bank or that investment if all they're going to get is the same return that they could have made if they didn't make the investment. Mm-hmm. That's very simplistic terms. That's what we have here. We've taken an investment of less than $200 million back in 2008, and now we've got an investment that's 2.5 times that amount, and you can't expect to have the same amount of return for that different size investment. Now, that's a little more complicated maybe than what you can get across in a grocery store, but that's very simply, you've got a much bigger investment here that you've got to support.
Mm-hmm.
But over that time, our rates haven't doubled. While our investment has doubled, mm-hmm. our rates haven't doubled. So that means that we are managing the operations and we have seen growth in our sales.
Yeah. Would there be any way for you guys to calculate how much of the new revenues you've generated have covered in your new investments? Do you follow me?
Well, I think that's probably some
versus rate increases.
Margin. You know, I mean,
okay.
you know, you do have your riders, I suppose, but, you know, and part of it is the fact that your margins are there, you're more efficient, you know, you get a little bigger. I'm not quite sure how you could...
You can look at your net sales margins, how much that's increased over the last 10 years, and mm-hmm. you have a cumulative effect on that.
You could, mm-hmm. or just hold net sales the same from 1 year period to another. And
you guys have done a pretty good job in that. That's the point of making sure the customers are paying their fair share as you build stuff out, and I think it's about... That's why I'm surprised you don't want to come in back to my beating that dead horse some more. I'm surprised you don't want to come back for a rate case because you've got good stories to tell. But if you can do it this way, I don't think I'm against it.
And, you know, as Dan mentioned, they're expensive to process as well.
Yep.
You know, at the end of the day, the slide that Travis put up there is kind of an abbreviated general rate case. I mean, that's what,
yeah,
at
exactly.
the end of the day, after you get done wrangling over whether the rate increase mm-hmm. should be this or whether adjustments be that, that's the numbers that are going to end up in your rate order for all practical purposes. So.
And it comes in to be a black box where we give you a little bit, you give a little bit. I get that.
Right, and you know, advocacy staff has cooperative to work with, so, you know, it's a good working relationship.
In the next slide, we did an O&M sensitivity, which I think mirrors what Mike had used as well. We, in visiting with Mike, we pointed out that it is a budget, that we do have a tendency to come in under budget. So what we did was we took a very conservative approach to the O&M and increased it by 4%, as well as the known outage. So we brought that in and did our same calculations, holding our margin the same, that significant increase in margin, keeping that the same, keeping our rate base the same, and as you can see in the yellow box at the bottom, it still comes in somewhat below 10%.
Including the $5 million rider.
With the rider included.
Where do you include, and I should know this, but I don't, where do you include the money that comes in your transmission rider? Where is that embedded here?
It would be in our top number on the sales number.
Okay, sale, okay. So changes in transmission cost allocation are going to hit that number really hard. What about the separate discussion that we're having, Dorsey and I and Tammy and whoever else, is about the changes with what could be happening in your transmission with all those variables with Southwest Power and WAPA? I mean, that number, how much could that number swing?
Well, and that's the transmission expense itself will be in that other O&M, and then the revenue that we receive off the rider is up in the sales piece. But, you know, I think we're still...
That $57 million is what?
That the $57 million includes what we are projecting for 2015. So that's essentially what you approved today, was our projected transmission expenditures for 15. So we're not seeing those, you know, bigger jumps till the contract expires. And
what about all the flux going on, though?
And that's what it's really going to hit, start in 2016. Because our contract runs through November, correct, Jay? Excuse me, of 15 with WAPA Basin.
No.
And so we have an agreement with them until that point. So it's after that. I mean, we're still in discussions every
So if that
day.
Falls apart, that it costs, you need more money, does that come, how do you recover that
we
money
would
back?
We would likely propose to put that in the transmission
rider.
Rider. So okay. We would make that change then. We would request that change next year when we, and then at that point in time, we should know more as well what those expenditures will be.
Okay.
I guess one thing to
Travis, can you tell me again, what did you take out of O&M for the sensitivity?
In terms of amount?
What was it that you took out? Because in your first projected, it was 66.
Right. What we did is we took our actions through November for 2014.
Uh-huh.
Estimated December, and then adjusted that as an increase of 4%.
We're saying inflation is 4%, so we just tacked on. All we did is tack on the inflation of 4% on our 2014
mm-hmm.
costs and said, sensitivity-wise, what would 2015 look like if we gave it a 4% increase in inflation in our operating costs.
And what did you use on the other chart, the chart before, that gave you a $62 million?
Based on our budget.
On our budget. Where
okay.
You know, bottom-up budget where everyone, as Mike mentioned, goes forth and submits their budget and they're reviewed, but it's the operating costs by district. They're prepared and what they feel they need to provide safe and reliable service.
So which is more accurate?
Well, one difference is that, you know, we budget that all positions are filled because you have to, a base budget includes that, right? Well, there's going to be some open positions, and depending upon the timing when you may replace them, when someone else may, you know, leave their position, and when that's replaced.
So the inflation would account for kind of that type of a
some of it.
Normal year.
I think it's going to be more than 4% just because of what's referred to as the Bakken bump. You know, as we see costs going out trying to procure costs for 2015, those costs are substantially higher than 14. So 4% I think is very conservative.
Right. Or they could be lower if things start slowing down.
Yeah, right.
Just to say what the number from now or what impact.
Right, exactly.
So Travis's number, for example, if somebody in Dickinson feels they need to add two more people to their crew, that's not going to show up in the 4%. It'll show up in the budget number.
Yes.
But it's not going to show up in the 4% number. This would assume all your labor, all your costs stayed the same, your headcount stayed the same, and all you're adding is a 4% adder for inflation.
Mm-hmm.
No extras, no new people, no extra expenses other than inflation.
And this assumes you're getting the rider here?
Right.
The 979.
The yellow.
Getting the rider.
Right. Yeah.
The income taxes line, how much does that change each legislative session with the whatever the policy comes out of there? Is that how much, I mean, the governor's got a new plan on income taxes. Does that affect you guys at all, or is that because we don't know what it's going to look like for the next two-year cycle? So what's that?
The federal tax is so much so much greater than the state income tax.
Okay, so that's so very small.
We can make a small amount, but the,
the federal is 35%. The state is about 3%. So
okay.
If they cut it in half, it would be significantly different.
That's something we should go in and lobby that they don't tax you guys as much?
Well,
has that ever been tried?
Helps.
I'm serious.
Well, no, I mean,
we go in and we support
taxes and income
property
taxes.
Taxes, you know,
we property taxes probably have a bigger impact than income tax.
In
but all those
okay.
things.
Yeah, you can see it's that's our taxes other than income. Property
mm-hmm.
taxes would be included in there.
You know, and you talk about margins.
Exactly.
That property taxes come down, you know, that helps you on your margins. That's why you've got better margins when that happens.
Do you ever need success lobbying that kind of stuff downstairs? I know the coal companies try it and the wind companies get their tax breaks.
You know, the industries, I think, do that lobbying. I think, you know, the property, you recall a few years ago, there was a big adjustment on property taxes.
2 years ago.
And I think, you know, when income taxes are adjusted, and Commissioner Christman can speak to this better than I mean, I think that's more of an industry, not just utility industry, but
all industry.
Each of the last several sessions since the Bakken really kicked in and there's been more money available, there's been a tax reduction of some type, and always mixed into that has been some on the corporate tax, which reflects just this conversation.
But to Travis's point, most of this is federal stuff anyway. Okay.
Next is Jay.
All right. I was just going to clarify one thing on the WAPA agreement ending in, I think it's actually October of next year. And there's some confusion over the SPP making our costs go up. That agreement ends in October, the WAPA agreement ends October of 2015. And no matter what happens,
it's going up.
Our costs are going up. So
yeah.
It's, I think if we, whatever happens with SPP could make those costs go up more than necessary, but no matter what, they are going up.
Well, and that's why I brought it out, because that number of $57 million, it might be $62 million. I mean, I'm still trying to get a picture.
Yes.
We've got some transmission meetings coming up with you guys, but I'm trying to get a picture of
I think how much that was our original estimate, because we knew the WAPA agreement was a very good agreement. I mean, getting off topic. Good for our customers. And so we knew, regardless, as Jay said, if they would have gone to SPP or MISO, that agreement was expiring and there was no interest.
But yet another customer cost that's coming.
But it's in 16 at this point in time.
Right, but whatever we can do to help you with the FERC and Southwest Power Pool.
Certainly.
And did I understand you correctly, Tammy, that you would envision that cost increase to be flow through the transmission rider?
Yes. Okay. That is where we would.
These dang riders everywhere.
that's where we would be close with that.
She's so good, isn't she?
All right, moving on.
Did you ask us to put it in the rider ahead of time, or you just put it in there?
We would ask.
We didn't have to prove it like we just did today.
Okay, I'm going to talk just hopefully real briefly about the 2015 plant additions. As you can see on that chart, they're lumped into several different buckets. And I think this is kind of to address Mike's concern of in past years not all of the budgeted money being spent, and kind of talking about why 2015 looks to be different and what those projects are, and why we're pretty well guaranteed, I think, to spend that budgeted money. So start up with the electric steam production. That's basically our existing coal plants. It says we're 10% of the basically $120 million, so that's about $12 million worth of investment there. Most of that is ongoing maintenance and upgrade, typical upgrade type stuff at our coal plants. Those are year-to-year basic things that we do over and over. There's also about $4.5 million worth of upgrades, some at Lewis and Clark, some at Heskett, and those are basically for pollution control compliance items. I think the importance of that is those are not really discretionary. We have to do those to be in compliance, so not spending that money in 2015 is really not an option, because we would end up out of compliance, and that wouldn't be a good thing for anybody. The next item is other electric production, and basically the vast majority of that cost, about $17.5 million, is to install two 9.5-megawatt units at the Lewis and Clark facility. Those will be natural gas. That's why they're in the other. And that is, again, very necessary for us to install those to keep up with the load in the Bakken or the...
9.5 megawatts? Build something big.
We're working on that separately.
You've heard our thoughts on that.
Yes, we do have those plans in place, but big takes time. And we needed these, almost this year. So these are really critical for next winter to make sure we have enough power in the Williston load pocket. It's kind of an isolated WAPA area up there, and so we need to have those up and running. And that's why we didn't. Didn't go with something like a 40 or 50. We basically built what we need for that, and because of the time. I mean, we're very time rushed to get those done next year. Yep.
Is this by Sydney? Is that the
Lewis and Clark
facility?
Yep.
This is one where you had a different plan, and it wasn't gas at first. There was a different plan.
No, that's actually incremental to that.
Okay.
The one you're talking about is actually in the 10% blue section. And I guess going back to that one and talking about whether we'll spend the $12 million in there, it's highly likely that that number is probably going to be closer to $20 million. So I guess the point there being that budgets are fluid. Sometimes you underspend your budget, and you know, like your reference to the state budget, you're kind of given a cap. Well, in our area, you're not necessarily capped. That's what we're allowed to spend on our either capital or O&M. But if something comes along and we need to overspend, there is the flexibility to get that. And we have a couple of projects in here, the one being in the steam area, where you know, our budgets were turned in a couple months ago, and already we're seeing we've got need to spend additional dollars over and above. And so looking through just in general in our budget, there's not a whole lot in there that's discretionary, and then there are a few things that are already additive to that. And given those couple additive things, we're pretty darn sure that we're going to at least spend what we've included here in front of you. And that item is one of them. Talk just real briefly about the electric distribution. That's really no longer in my area, so I don't have a whole lot of detail on those anymore, but of those, of what's in there, most of that is what you're talking about with the Watford City type service lines and distribution lines, things like that going in.
You guys
in.
Got anything in the queue that we're going to have to cite for transmission?
Anything in the queue that we're going to have to cite? I don't think so. We've got a couple projects in 15 that are carryovers from this year that are going to be erected.
Not have to cite, get to cite.
Get to cite.
Okay. Just curious, because we got that basin filed, their second extension that we're working on that right now.
Yeah. No, we've got several that we're building, but they're all permitted and ready to go. Some of the bigger items in the distribution area, we've got a couple of substations, one in Bismarck, one in Mandan, that are kind of carryovers from 14. They're both essentially done, just need a few tie-ins and things like that, and that money will be spent in 25. So again, projects that are carryovers or pretty much guaranteed to be done, and so the idea of not spending all the money, again, I think we're pretty well on the way. Then electric transmission, I think that was one of them that was referenced earlier. The 39% equals about $51 million, and half of that is in two projects. One is the Little Muddy project, basically feeding Williston, and the other is a Kenmare to Lignite line, and those projects are broken up into different phases, but there's the line and there's the substations that go with those. The Little Muddy has one substation that goes with that, and that substation is that one is complete and ready to go. So the substation's done. The transmission line, which was really the hold up in 14, the reason that one didn't get done in 14 was easements, and basically that was trying to cite something right around the city of Williston or Watford City is not only expensive, but very difficult. The landowners are kind of tired of dealing with land agents and having easements and things like that. But one of the big holdups we had there was actually the city landfill, and they changed their minds a couple of times during the project that, yeah, you can run through our property. Nope, you have to go around the property. Nope, well, okay, we'll let you back in. And so we had to reacquire land a couple of different times to redesign the project. You know, we had the engineering all done one direction and then had to go back in and change it and then acquire a different route. So, but basically, again, the substation on the end is done. The transmission lines, the foundations are going in next month, and the line will be erected and strung by springtime. And the story on the Kenmare to Lignite line is essentially the same deal, except it's got two substations. One substation is complete. The other one, I believe, will be totally complete today, if not today, sometime this week. And then the line has to go in, and again, that'll start either in January or February. And so that one really should be complete, and that, you know, that addresses half of that electric transmission segment there. And then there's, you know, a few other examples that we've got. One of the bigger items in there is tying in that simple cycle generator at the Lewis and Clark station. Again, it doesn't do us any good to put those two units in there if we don't put the substation in and tie that in. So they're, you know, pretty mandatory type projects that we really have to get done. And most of the rest of these, again, also are reliability type projects that they're not necessarily load growth, not real susceptible to the oil field coming or going. They're real reliability projects that we do need to get done. So,
do you share transmission with Central Power at all? You get, they're all the complete system.
No, we do have one or two short segments that were tied in with them, but it's not nearly like WAPA Basin or any of the other distribution co-ops.
I just learned they're kind of falling through the holes. They don't necessarily belong to MISO. They don't belong to Southwest Power Pool. So I just, you know, I didn't know that.
Yeah, not yet.
Not yet.
I think when Basin is done, I think they'll probably make up their minds. So that's really all I had on the plant additions. Any other questions?
Well, getting back to Brian's point about something large scale and something baseload, like a combined cycle plant or something, because sadly, I don't think we adequately planned a few years ago when maybe a coal plant could have been built, and probably right now we couldn't. But as long as we approve another wind farm here and there and $20 million for a little bit of gas power up at Sydney, doesn't that just keep always buying you another year of pretty undependable and expensive power rather than doing that long-term tough project that, as you said, that takes years of planning and building?
This one particular project buys us 1 year of good sleep at night. it doesn't really push off the larger combined cycle project. We've got that one in the works. We're doing this preparations on, you know, getting partners and things like that to get that one going. So, and we understand what the desire is, and we have the same desire. I mean, we don't want to keep building these just-in-time, small units.
And I don't want to belabor this because I have another appointment at 3:30 and I need Victor in a few minutes to prep for it. But I feel like we are, I don't know if it's encouraging, but at least allowing you to push that decision out farther and farther. I'm confident the need is coming, but sometimes I wonder, as long as we keep approving this stuff,
And this one isn't ever be pulled. This one isn't necessarily a system resource or a system need. It's the Williston load pocket. It's an isolated area that really needs something to address the growth that's going on right there and the inability for us to get additional power from WAPA. And we don't have that issue on the rest of our system. It's really a very specific need for just that area. And so that it really doesn't impact our need for the large project coming up in 2019-2020.
Well, just to expound on Randy's point, I mean, I think that we've all been pretty clear what we think is a good idea. You have ADP, and I've said many times, use ADP for something big. You take all the risk off your back. You come in and ask for your ADP for your 300-megawatt combined cycle gas, and we build it.
That's our plan.
Victor, make a note of that.
And then we just, Garrett's going to wrap it up here.
Just to address the concerns, you know, that advocacy and the commission has in regards to our return and our projections for 2015, we know it's a forecast. Forecasts change every month. So we're recommending that we carry over then through 2015 the earnings sharing that's in place in 2014.
50%?
50%.
One quick question here, because I know, Randy, we need to wrap it up, but you mentioned here the kind of summarizing the need for this this increase, 27% increase in rate base, 17% increase in non-fuel O&M, partially offset by the 8% increase in non-fuel revenue. That gets to my earlier question. If there's a way for you to show how much you're offsetting these costs with increased non-fuel revenue, that would be helpful. I'd be interested in knowing that.
We can provide you an increase from year to year, what that net margin and sales volumes have increased, and you can kind of, you know, that you could, some of it's weather, others would be in just increased customers as well.
Okay, well, I'm not an accountant, so I'm not sure if what you just said you can provide gives me partially offset by 8%, partially offset, whatever that is. I'd like more of a number there.
We'll do our best shot to put okay. together that analysis.
Thank you.
Yeah, if that's what you're looking for, let us know.
Yep.
All right. Okay. Anything else anybody have? Mike?
Can I ask just one question? I've been saving up the whole presentation. It seems to be like a big crux of their argument right off the bat, and it looks crazy to me, and I'm just wondering where this information came from. And so
last slide you're talking?
The very first, well, it's it is the last one in their slide, the first one we talked about. But it seems crazy that we could be suggesting that MDU's rates are 3 cents a kilowatt hour less than Otter Tail's. You know, I used to do this all the time on a regular basis. I haven't updated it for a couple of years, so maybe everything could have just flip-flopped over 2 years' time. But this is not what I was accustomed to seeing. And
I've updated it.
I mean, generally, where did it come from, just out of curiosity?
Is this with the proposed?
Based on tariffs.
Oh, okay, yeah. That's got all kinds of noise in it. The way to normally do it is to divide, you know, total sales and revenues. Yeah, I think that's a misleading slide myself. But there's all kinds of things that you know, riders and things that are included in the real cost of a bill to customers. So normally, if you're doing a rate comparison, you take total revenues divided by total sales, and that gives you a real indication of what the cost is on a kilowatt hour basis. I know that you guys aren't 3 cents less a kilowatt hour than Otter Tail. So I just.
Based on this consumption level.
I mean, it might be based on, if you take base.
It's just a bill comparison, simple bill comparison, where we took, if everybody used the same consumption based on the tariffs available to us, we calculated.
I mean.
But to Mike's point. It doesn't include transmission riders
it
and fuel clock.
Oh,
included everything.
It's a bill. It's not an average realization over a year. It's a bill based on a tariff as of September 2014.
Okay.
Victor, that's your job. Apples to apples. Figure out what those numbers are. Well, Commissioner Fenorchuk, we're transitioning, right?
Yeah, you'll probably have to hand, I'll be handing this one over to you to wrap up, but I guess we would have, typically we'd have a work session and then discuss any other issues. This was an informal. We could choose to do a formal if anybody felt it necessary to do that. Otherwise, we should just work through it and come up with a decision and move on.
Yeah, that was kind of my only question, is the thought process forward, is that this number is based on you starting to retrain those revenues when? January 8th, January. Correct?
I put January 8th based on your January
but those number, meetings. Right, but those numbers would slide if we don't have it in the January 7th agenda. Okay. We just had a meeting today, but I think that Commissioner Fedorchak's right on track here. We'll quickly decide. For me personally, I'm much happier now than I was 2 hours ago, just to give you that feedback. So I think we'll just do that, get a work session quickly, and maybe we won't even need a work session. Sometimes we put together a draft order, and then we see if one of us wants a work session. We schedule it. If not, we bring it to a vote. So, anything else? Going once, going twice? Company?
No, nothing for me.
Alana?
Oh,
our attorney.
There's just a lot of information here today, a lot of facts, which we want to be sure are in the record.
Oh, yes.
We want the parties to waive their right to cross-examine. And then if you want Victor's analysis also in the record?
No, Victor's analysis for me was more of just
okay.
But Dan,
I'd like to see Victor's analysis. I mean, as long as it's out there, we might as well include it.
So if we're sitting here at informal and we need you guys to waive your rights to standard cross-examination, et cetera, for this information.
And do you offer this all this up as your official testimony?
And we would, our testimony as well as our PowerPoint.
And we'd be happy to receive it.
Yep.
Okay. Well, anything else that I didn't do?
No. Thanks.
You'd think after 2.5 years I'd have figured it out. Okay. All right. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.